Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today is a special show because I will be starting off the show with an interview with a member of a couple groups, a guy named Benjio Caffey, who sang in a couple groups. One of the groups was called the Sadigans, and another was called Solid Gold, and he has a very interesting history, so you should keep tuned for the interview. And there's also one working mic, so it'll be a little echoey in here, so bear with us. But definitely, we got some cool material and even some unreleased material that we'll be playing. And the material is really excellent and really interesting, so you should keep tuned. So first of all, thanks so much for coming down to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so first of all, could you talk about where you are originally from?
Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay, and how did you first get involved with music?
Well, in Birmingham, it's a great deal of musical situation goes on, and I was living at one point next door to the late Eddie Kendricks, and down the street from me was Paul Williams of the Temptations, and they went to school with my brother there in Birmingham. We was all from a town called Press City and Inslee.
Okay.
And we put our time into a lot of music and a lot of baseball and stuff like that. So,
were you about the same age as Eddie?
Actually, I was a little younger than Eddie and my brother was. That they were attending a school called Holy Family, and then they went to a school called Western High School. And even a little while, they were at Eben Parker High School, and they went a different route than I did.
So were you, like, were they singing back then?
Yeah, they were singing back then. And Eddie had a very powerful voice. And everybody was entertained by that. It really originated from a group that were in Birmingham that would never record. There was a gospel group called the Inslee Jubilees. And the tenor of that group was a gentleman by the name of Mr. Marsh. And Mr. Marsh kind of more or less showed Eddie all of the intricate parts of singing the tenor. Eddie just naturally had a beautiful voice anyway. And Paul's uncle and father was a member of this group called the Inslee Jubilees. And it took a Sam Cooke and the Soul Stirrells to come into that city to kind of more or less keep control of those guys. The Inslee Jubilees were an excellent group, but they refused to record.
Okay, so you're saying Eddie was singing in that gospel group?
No, Mr. Marsh taught him how to sing that tenor because they.
Okay, so Mr. Marsh was in that group and was teaching Eddie how to sing?
Right.
So what was your relationship to all of that?
Actually, just an onlooker, and it inspired me in such a way. I got very involved with music myself. In fact, when I went and saw the first symphony in Birmingham at the City Auditorium, I fell in love with music. Before then, and even today, and I won't try it now, but I was an excellent baseball player.
Okay.
And I played shortstop, and I could pitch. But shortstop was my position, and I was very, very good at it.
So were you involved? Did you ever start singing when you were in Birmingham?
No. Actually, I started singing when I got out to Berkeley, California. We formed a group called the Cameos, and that was before the real Cameos came on.
How old were you when you moved to Berkeley?
I would say when I went there, I was 18 years old. And we were working with all of the groups, and they had some fantastic groups out there.
So what, like, was it, what year was that? Like, what groups were around at that time?
That was in 59, and they had groups, I can't recall their names, but they had,
Were the Vibrations around? Like, there were the Jayhawks? What groups?
Oh, yeah, the Vibration was out then. They were very good. But the group that had the big hit, I'm trying to think of their name, it goes back a long time. These guys were Sunday Kind of Love.
The Harp Tones, did they do that song?
I think the Harp Tones did that song.
Okay.
And big hit.
I'm probably making an idiot of myself because I know nothing about doo-wop and well, I know about soul records.
It got to
Bob Miner's laughing at me in the other room.
Yeah, well, it got to be really, really a big thing because that group out of Canada, they kind of like put the light on the stage, I would think, and they had a big hit. And then came on, I'm trying to think of this one group that had that big hit out, and they didn't, it sold for two years, the song just got big. And when I left Berkeley and got into the Air Force, I was up in Fairbanks, Alaska, and we formed our own group, and we were touring the entire Alaskan area, the Yukon, Anchorage, Fairbanks, all of those places. We was all over it. And my really musical stint came when I came away from Fairbanks and got here in Chicago. I started writing songs and singing on a lot of different shows, Tyrone Davis and Otis Clay and all of those people was out there with us, and so I was writing for Betty Everett.
So what year did you come to Chicago?
I came here in 61.
So you were in Berkeley, and then you went to the Air Force?
I was in the Air Force when I went to Berkeley.
And then you went to Alaska?
I went to Alaska, and in Alaska, was there from 60-61, and we were able to get out early because we earned it with the group that I was in up there called the Cameos. And those guys were supposed to meet up here with me in Chicago, and we was going to start our career, and they didn't show.
Okay.
So then I took off, and I started writing for the late Leo Estelle and Archie Russell and Hillary Johnson. And I was writing for a group called The Emotions, but before we could get anything out of them, they was gone to.
But that was in the late 60s.
Yeah.
But you came to Chicago in 61, right?
Right.
So what were you doing in Chicago in 61?
In 61, I was just out learning all of that I needed to learn because I just got out of service, and I was singing by myself at that time.
So you were actually, were you performing?
Yeah.
So where were you performing at?
Practically all of the towns, and mostly I hooked up with the late Red Saunders that used to have the big band in all the plush clubs, hotels in the Loop area.
Okay.
And I was doing all of that just for him, opening up the shows.
Were you like a jazz singer?
No. I was singing top 100 and mostly a lot of Sam Cooke, a lot of Joe Simon, a lot of what was his name? Not Lou Rawls. The other boy that was really good. It was. Names won't come to me. I did a lot of songs that had been out with. Even the Shepherd songs and stuff like that.
But in the early 60s, you kind of were like a nightclub act, you were saying?
Yeah, nightclub act. And
And but you didn't have original material. You were just sing. So how long were you a nightclub act for?
All the way up until actually the early 80s, when I ventured from doing what I was doing, and I had gotten married and everything, and my wife took over June Conquest's place with Donny Hathaway.
Okay, well, we'll get to that, but I'm still trying to stay in the 60s.
In the 60s.
So in the early 60s, you said you were working with Red Saunders.
Yeah.
And you were working with different nightclubs.
Hotels. Conrad Hilton, Pete Congress, Radisson, all of the plus hotels. Red Saunders actually was the bandmaster of the Regal Theater.
Okay.
And whatever came from any city, mostly Motown that came through here.
Okay.
He was the bandmaster over there.
Okay. So, and did he have like a review, and you would be one of the singers in his review?
Yes.
Okay. Who were the other people on the review?
I can't recall those people's name. He had a duet young lady, but Green was a part of it, the one that plays the violin, and he had his own band that played with there. But a lot of those guys, me being as youthful as I was and unknowledgeable of Chicago, I didn't really know their names.
So not a lot of famous people not a lot of people that went on to become famous were in the review at the time?
No, no.
Okay, they were just kind of small-time nightclub singers.
I would say that, yeah. But in Chicago, all over, everyone sang. Like, people like Mighty Joe Young.
Okay.
Just super singers. And those guys would sing all day and all night. And stuff like that.
So were you singing full time?
Yeah.
Okay. So that was your job. You weren't working. You were
just
working for Red Saunders in the 60s.
Yes.
So you said by the late 60s you had hooked up with like Leo Austell and was writing for him.
Right. Leo Austell, Archie Russell, Hillary Johnson, and on the label we had such artists as.
It was the Twin Stacks label that the Emotions were on at the time, right? There was like Brainstorm and Twin Stacks.
Right. Brainstorm, and actually it went off into Fantasy Records. And that's the one we had the big record on, Betty Everett on, but late Eugene record of the Shalites. And Floyd Smith wrote that, and I had the B-side of it. Called You Take Me, and they had The Rich Has to Cry. There Come a Time was a big hit.
Okay.
And we ventured from there. We was getting ready to really go 100% with the Emotions when suddenly they had a deal with Stack Records, and the world became their oyster.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So how did you originally hook up with Leo Austell and Hillary Johnson as a writer?
Actually, I had wrote the song, and Archie discovered my writing ability.
Okay.
And he took me to show Leo the songs that I had wrote, and we did the song, and they flipped out. It was supposed to be the next release on that album at the time, and we had this other artist on there called and I get here to the station and I forget everybody's name. He was arranged by, I brought Donny Hathaway to the label, and Fool Up on Here was a big one. But what happened back to the time when Betty Everett and everybody was happening, and we had the boy on the stage had Chicken Head. What was his name?
Bobby Rush.
All of us was down there on that label together, and other people off in different offices was like Gene Chandler and at the time the Pharaohs, and all of us was just putting everything together. And then we suddenly start doing things called the Settingans.
Okay.
And we went into the studio and started working with everything, because those were friends of ours, Maurice, Billy, Michael, we call him Lom Lee now, and Satisfield, Don Ashton, all of those guys was like real close friends of us. And we just went in the studio, and that's who did our session. The flutist on there was the one that mystified me. That was Chuck Handy.
Okay.
And
okay, so let's back up. So the Settingans, which was your group.
I was in the group. It was Kermit's group, really.
Okay, so let's talk. That's what you're starting to talk about now.
Yeah.
So originally in the '60s, you were talking about how you were a solo artist, and then you became a songwriter.
Yeah.
So the Settingans was Kermit. It was Kermit Chandler had formed the group.
Yeah, we.
So Kermit Chandler, he was the guitarist for the Shepherds. Is that right?
That's correct.
And you had written two songs for the Shepherds.
Yes.
The two songs that I noticed you wrote for the Shepherds, one was called "The Name of the Game," and the other was called "Your Love Has a Hole in It."
Yes.
So how did you know the Shepherds?
Through Kermit. Kermit and I was real close friends.
How did you know Kermit?
When I was performing for Red Saunders,
okay,
I met Kermit through who was the artist? The artist was he was a producer. His name was Bill Collins, and Bill Collins had the guy that wrote that was singing the song "Elephant Walk."
Donald Jenkins. Yeah, Bill Collins had that Black Beauty record label that Donald Jenkins was on.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, we all met up there and we became staunch friends. And Kermit and my situation just grew because I was the opening act for the Shepherds.
Okay.
And the Shepherds would come on after me, and man, they were dangerous. I think they would have been the what the Dales became had not their producer got in trouble with feds.
Okay.
Yeah, and so that's how the situation became really staunch friends.
So you met them through like a show. You said you opened up for the Shepherds, and then you became friends with Kermit.
Yes. Well, actually, I became friends with all of them because they were just a great bunch of guys.
So, like, what year would you say you made friends with them?
The Shepherds had that record out, Glitter, and I would say it was the...
I think it was mid-60s, something
like
that.
Yeah, in the late 60s when we all got together there. They had Come Home, and Glitter and stuff like that, and they started working in and around the area.
Okay.
And I became the show opener for them.
Okay, so you did a lot of shows with the Shepherds.
Yes.
And were you staying Southside also at that time?
Yes.
So you became friends with them, and then the Shepherds, you said that they had management problems and they broke up?
No, they didn't break up. What happened was, it was in the studio, and the gentleman's name was Bell, and somehow he got his books and things got mixed up with the feds, and they was getting ready to jail him, and next thing you know, he was living in Switzerland.
Okay.
Away from all the craziness. And so that they were being managed by him, and that's what happened. And from that point on, Bonky Shepherd took over.
Okay.
And Bonky Shepherd was a part of the company that had Gene Chamberlain.
Constellation Records.
Yeah. And that's where my writing for the Shepherds and all that came into play.
Yeah, one of the records you wrote was on Bunky label.
Yeah.
And one of the records was on a label called Sharp. Which I think might have even been Detroit. I'm not sure.
I don't know where they were coming from with it, but that was a while back. In fact, that was something new you brought up to me. We were just putting together a whole lot of music at that time, and whoever did it, they did it, and that was it.
So did the Shepherds break up at some point? Because I know that Mill Edwards went to join the Esquires. So what happened? The Shepherds broke up, and then you started.
Well, Miller's brother died.
Okay.
The real good-looking guy in the group. He was called upon, and he left us. And then they continued to sing. But it wasn't going anywhere, and so Miller was called upon by the Esquires, and he did that lick in it and made the difference in that record. Get on up and get away.
I interviewed one of the Esquires, and they said that Miller is the one that came up with that that answer part to the song.
He's very good. The whole group was a group that was like a family to me. Murray, which was the main lead singer, and Perk, you just didn't get enough of those two.
Murray is Murray Eskridge,
right?
And Perk is O.C. Perkins. Is that
O.C. Perkins?
Okay,
he has passed away too.
And
James Isaac, which we always call him brother. Those guys could sing.
Okay.
There was nothing you could play with. They was very, very good. And that's where a lot of this came from. But then it expanded to the group that had the big record out, Ain't No Big Thing.
The Radiance?
The Radiance. We became staunch friends. Leonard Cashton became a very close friend of mine, who wrote that big hit for Eddie Kendrick, Keep On Trucking.
Okay.
All of us were so close that it was like family. We all met up at Kermit's house, and we just had a masterful ball, because his mom was just fantastic. Was like a mom to me. And Mary, the sister, and Tommy and Michael and all of us was just like really a family, and everything expanded from there. And then we lost Kermit, which was pretty rough on me.
But that was late. That was later.
Right. But what I was leading into saying is that through all of the partying and the fun that we was having, I ran into a guy that, even today, I really appreciate him, and that's Kenny Rideout. And when I had my TV show with Philip East on Channel 19, we used to reach out and get talent from everywhere. And I met Kenny Rideout, who used to be the lead singer of the Cinestage group. And they had, in fact, they had been nominated to possibly take over the Temptations place. And they had a pretty sizable record called Someday. And we used to always have fun together and meet up at the parties, and Kenny would be running through the place, "I want me a girlfriend." And we'd have that kind of fun. And those guys were really tremendous on RCA when the Satyricons were in RCA recording too at one, Wecker.
I want to get to the stuff you were doing in the 80s, but I'm trying to get to the formation of the Satyricons actually still.
Okay.
So, had the Shepherds had broken up at that point?
Yeah.
So how did the Satyricons form?
Kermit and I was just always together. People really thought we was biological brothers.
Okay.
And we just started singing in the house one day, and he said, "You know, we should put our little group together and see what we can do."
Okay.
I say, sound like a winner, but, you know, we'll try something. No one has to instill themselves to belong to a contractual or anything like that. And he said, well, let's see what we do. And we came up with some songs.
So Kermit was previously just the guitarist, right? But yeah. he was singing this time, right?
With the encouragement from me.
Okay.
Hey, so Kermit, you're writing these songs and they sound very good. Let's see what we sound like together. And he said, well, we need another voice. I said, I'll call my buddy. And that's where we call him Chill. Willie Logan was his name.
Okay.
And so it
was originally you and just Kermit Chandler, and then you got Willie Logan.
Right.
And Willie Logan has a big past in Chicago, too, because he was in Willie Logan and the Plaids, mm-hmm. who was actually an important doo-wop group that had recorded as the Equalos before mm-hmm. that also.
Yeah.
So how did you know Willie?
I didn't know Willie. I knew Willie's sister, because she was in a lot of pageants running for Miss Chicago, and she was doing very well, and she was dating a friend of mine from Birmingham, Billy Edwards. And I was talking, and she said, you got a nice voice. I said, I'm trying to find another voice that can sing really good tenor. She said, you talk to my brother? And I say, who's your brother? And I think she was naming the group. I think then the group was called the
Equalos.
No, Esquibos or something like that. Whatever their name was, she told me about him, and I knew Willie's oldest brother, and he was fantastic. But something happened to him, and he died early. I met Willie through his sister, and Willie became quite an encouragement to me, and we built up a real, real strong friendship. And I have a problem, and I can't find him. I don't know where to look for him anymore.
So you got Willie into the group through knowing his sister.
Yes.
And then, so you originally had three members. It was you, Kermit, and Willie, and then you got one more member, is that right?
Well, we got one more member when Kermit became very ill.
Oh, so originally it was three members. It was you, Kermit, and Willie Logan.
Exactly.
And you originally went and cut a demo with just those three members, is that
yes.
right?
Yes.
So, and then you later recorded with a different member, is that right?
Right.
So I have the demo version you went and cut, and then I'll play the later version you released.
Okay.
So the demo version, you originally cut a three-song demo. And the three-song demo, you cut three songs. One was Lovers to Friends, one was Smokin', and the third song was called Dog Eat Dog.
Yes, right.
So, first of all, how'd you come up with the name The Satigons, and what did that mean?
Yeah, Kermit played those kind of games. He came up with the name The Satigon.
It was just something he came up with in his head.
Yeah, something just came up, and he said, we are The Satigons, and we started to say, Kermit, is that satanic, Kermit? And he started cracking up, laughing, just like you're doing now. I say, we'll take a vote on it. And Willie says, it's okay with me. I say, okay, we'll go with The Satigons. And that was it.
Okay. And then where was this demo? So you guys recorded this demo yourselves and produced it yourselves, is that right?
Actually, no, that's not right. The gentleman who produced it on us was Mr. Lynn Bowden. Mr. Bowden was the original dean of music at Florida A&M. And he and Kermit had became extremely close, and he produced the first situation on us.
So was he in Chicago at the time?
Yes.
And so Kermit just knew him really well, and he produced you, and he decided to produce you guys.
Yes.
So where did you record this?
The first recording took place at the name of the studio. We did the first recording at RCA.
Okay. And let me play the record and we can talk some more about it.
Okay.
But there's three voices on it, and there's three voices on it, and like you were saying, the three voices are you, Kermit, and Willie Logan.
Exactly.
Okay, so here it is. This is the Sata Guns with an unreleased demo version of Lovers to Friends.
Okay. Been a long time.
Like this?
Is it possible?
By chance?
Were you ever in New York?
Would you believe? Would you believe?
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just the Sata Guns with a very unique sounding record. That was the unreleased demo version of Lovers to Friends. And if you're just tuning in, I have Benji O'Caffey, who sings on that record. So, first of all, who sings lead on that record?
That's Kermit Chambers singing lead on that.
And definitely, it's there's almost no record that sounds like that, just because it has such a kind of unique psychedelic sound, and I think Kermit's kind of gravelly voice really works well with the sound on the record. So at the beginning, who's doing the voice? You guys are all switching off doing the voices.
In the monologue, yeah.
Yeah.
I started off, and then Willie come in, and then Kermit come in, and then we just bob and weave throughout.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty cool, and it's a really cool cut. And then what adds to the kind of the psychedelic sound on the record is the band. So could you talk about who the band is on the record?
Well, what is known today as Earth, Wind, Fire, they were known then as the Pharaohs.
So one thing that's cool is the like weird psychedelic flute. Who's playing the flute?
That's Chuck Handy.
Okay.
Yeah, fantastic. And you just fall in love with that guy.
And who's playing the congas on the record?
That's Mr. Henry doing that. And he was the one that eventually went away with Kurt Smithfield.
And the psychedelic guitar playing has to be Kermit,
that
right?
That is Kermit.
Okay.
The greatest.
Yeah, the only thing I can even think of that sounds like that in Chicago are the Donald Jenkins and the Delighters records that were coming out at the time, and it was because Kermit was doing those also.
Kermit was just awesome.
Yeah, he was like a genius.
Well, really, he was a genius.
Yeah.
No one could come even close to the kind of guitarist he was.
And, I mean, it's a really kind of unique sounding record that was like a product of the time, like, and it came out around sometime around the early 70s, like 1970, 71,
right.
And it actually never came out. So you pressed it up as a demo. It was like a dub, like a 10-inch acetate,
right?
And it had three songs on it. The three songs were "Lovers to Friends," "Smoking," and another song called "Dog Eat Dog," which hopefully I'll have time to play, since that was never even one of the release tracks on the 45 that got released.
No, they was very high on smoking.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know the gentleman that released that was the late Willie Dixon.
Okay.
He was just a wonderful person. I was working with him 100%.
So did you cut the demo with the intention of shopping it around to different labels?
Well, yes and no. We didn't get a chance to. Willie Dixon heard it, and he was ready to go with it right then and there. Smokin' did make what was known as the number one radio station at that time, and it was WVON.
So Willie just heard the cut, and he decided to put it out.
Plus he knew me very well.
Okay.
And he didn't have to go into, wondering about us or anything. It's just everybody was just rallying around me, and the sound was just massive at that time.
Okay. So you just played it for him, and he liked it, and he picked it up. And he picked it up on his Yambo record label, is that right?
Well, I introduced him to the late Mr. Lynn Bowden, who was the actual producer of the music.
Okay.
The tracks and all of that. And we had a meeting, and he listened to it, and he was ready to go ahead, and he made the deal.
Okay, so did he just buy the rights to it from Lynn?
I don't,
because I think Len's name isn't on the record.
I think maybe for that particular record he did, but the production of it and all the music and stuff, Len Bowden family still have that.
Okay.
So,
but he didn't release the record as is. Like you re-recorded it, right?
Yes, we re-recorded it with a new lead singer, which was James Isaac.
Who was in the Shepherds, right?
Who was a member of the Shepherds, yeah.
So you had mentioned before that Kermit had gotten sick.
Yes.
So you went to James Isaac because you knew him from the Shepherds.
Yeah, I knew him, and I knew the kind of mentality he had. It was a plus. And we were then just trying to save the whole situation and get it out there in the street.
So did the Sadigans ever do any shows?
Actually, it never got to that.
Okay.
It never got to that. And that's a good question. Because we were lined up for shows, but something occurred, and as in Chicago, it never happened.
You could kind of tell that you never did shows from your photo, because you don't have suits.
Right.
You just look like
right.
You put on your clothes and went to the...
we did, because we weren't at that point even expecting what did occur. We just went and said, make a shoot. And the shoot was supposed to just show us what we looked like. And then from there, they would bill us, you know, and it just never did formulate.
So So you were saying the record that actually, you actually did get radio play, you're saying, and the record that got played, the side that got played was the Smoke Inside.
Yeah, it was ready to go, but then problems came up. People wanted too much, too soon, and I don't believe Mr. Dixon wanted to get involved with it to the degree that he said he don't have time for those kind of problems.
So, on the second version of Lovers to Friends, does brother Isaac sing lead on that version?
I believe he did sing lead on that side too. See, when Kermit became very, very ill, he also demised in the hospital, and then so we had to find a replacement quickly.
Wait, you're saying he died?
Yes.
Right around that? I thought he died like around 1980, like later.
No, right around that time.
Oh, he?
Yes.
So that was around like 72, 73?
Right.
Oh, I didn't realize that he passed that early.
Yeah, he did.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
So let me play. I just wanted to play the second version so people could compare how it sounded.
Okay.
But it's cool that people finally got to hear the original version with Kermit singing lead, because people otherwise would have never gotten to hear his voice because he never really sang on any records, because he was always the guitarist.
Right.
So people could compare, even though you said, and I'll play Smokin' later if we have time also.
Okay.
And then hopefully I'll have time to play Dog Eat Dog too, although I know you have a lot more story and you were in another group also.
Yeah.
So let me play this, the second version of Lovers to Friends. This is the released version so people can compare. So this is the released version of the Sadigans with Lovers to Friends.
Excuse me, but I believe we met before.
Say, girl, would you like to try something different?
You look so beautiful. I knew you'd look like this.
Is it possible?
By chance, will you ever
believe
us? Maybe with a glass.
Or is it reality?
Could you believe?
Good and true.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just the Sadagons with the released version of Lovers to Friends that had James Isaac.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. We all call him brother from
James Brother Isaac, replacing Kermit Chandler on vocals. And so what happened with the group after that? Like, you said that you guys never toured, is that right?
No, we never got into touring. After the record Smoking hit the radio wave, things just didn't ignite. It didn't happen the way it should have, but, you know, and this is record business.
Okay. So, did the group break up soon after that?
I can't say that we really broke up, but everybody went their individual way, and I created a group called Solid Gold.
So, what year did you form Solid Gold?
Gosh, I don't know. It was
I think your record came out around 78, something like that.
Yeah, around that right around that time.
And the group had your wife in it, is that right?
Yeah, she was the lead singer.
And your wife had some history singing before that, is that right?
Right.
What's the story with that?
Well, when June Conquest got out of record business, she was supposed to record with Sam Cooke's brother, L.C. Cooke. The song was called "Mama Said Thank You."
You mean with that with?
Well, it ended up being Donny Hathaway, and my wife took June Conquest's place, and June did the actual recording, but Donny and my wife Lucy traveled throughout everywhere.
Wait, so I'm sorry, I'm confused. So you're saying June Conquest was supposed to record as a duo with LC?
Yes.
And then instead of being with LC, June Conquest ended up recording with Donny Hathaway. You're saying
that's the time that Sam was killed.
Okay.
And it just played a hell of a turmoil on LC.
So that started Donny Hathaway's career with as a duo with June Conquest, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And then you're saying that your wife was supposed to replace June, or did replace
June? Did replace June, because June stepped out of music business.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So your wife was originally performing with Donny Hathaway?
Yes.
And what was your wife's name?
Lucy.
So was she performing, because I know that June Conquest and Donny Hathaway were performing as June and Donny, right?
Right. That was my wife and Donny.
So was your wife performing as Lucy and Donny?
As June and Donny.
So she was performing also as June and Donny.
Right.
Were they, like, touring?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they went practically everywhere, and I was driving them. And
so she became the new June.
Yes.
What, like, around what year did that happen?
Right around 80,
81. Well, it would have to be 70s.
78 or 79 then, when...
Well, I think it would have to be early 70s.
Yeah. I can't recall. Okay. See, we was all out at, what was that, 79th and Stony Island at Curtis.
Okay.
And actually, Donnie was brought in as just an arranger for Curtis. And what happened when June stepped out of business and LC was so broken behind his brother, we all understood that. They went in and did the session, but he could never really get it out because it was so hurting. And I understand now that my wife has passed, I have a great deal of that problem myself, trying to get back to where I was when it comes to singing. You break up a lot.
Yeah, it's difficult to deal with, I imagine.
It is very difficult, you know, and so, but getting back into Lucy and Donnie, it was known as June and Donnie. They used to be all over Chicago, and there was a club on the west side of Chicago known as, everybody came there. I can't think of the name of the club, but that's where Donnie and Lucy was always performing when they wasn't on the road at the Kiel Auditorium and over in Detroit at those big clubs there. And we just went, it just got to be one of those stages where suddenly Donnie was called upon by Atlantic Records to be take over King Curtis' place and to get the chance to record The Ghetto. That's a song that he wanted to always record himself, which was a big hit for him.
So he became a solo artist.
Yes. And he actually went there with the thought to be a duet artist with Roberta Flack. And many of those things, they were supposed to be duet, like Walking in the Park.
Okay.
And all that kind of stuff sort of been, but some things happened and it wasn't like that. And so one thing led to the next thing, and next thing I knew, my friend was gone. And so it's a long history of craziness that I don't really talk about things that gets that intricate.
Okay.
But
So pretty much your wife was performing with Donny Hathaway for a while.
Yes. And
before, so it was in between. So first Donny Hathaway was performing with June Conquest. Then he was with your wife for a while.
Well, no, I won't say it that way. It was supposed to be June Conquest and L.C. Cook recording Mama Said Thank You.
But then it ended up being Donny Hathaway and
came in and took over LC place, yeah.
But then June Conquest retired.
Yeah.
Your wife performed with Donny.
Mm-hmm.
But then ultimately, Roberta Flack ended up recording with Donny on a different label.
Right.
Okay. So your wife had some recording history.
Yes.
But previously.
Mm-hmm.
So then you ended up forming a new group with your wife called Solid Gold.
Exactly.
Probably around 76, something like that.
Yeah.
And whose idea was it to form Solid Gold?
Me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And where'd you come up with the name?
Actually, we had the name Solid Gold before the show came out.
Okay.
And when we were trying to contract the name and get it on the our tournament, they said it couldn't be used because the records a long time ago was called Solid Gold, you know, the ones that hit.
Okay.
And we had never even heard it. But anyway, that's the way that went. And next thing we knew, they had a big TV show called Solid Gold. And we had been actually performing everywhere. And I took the group back to the late Red Saunders, and we used to open up all of his shows for him, and he introduced us to the late Maurice King, who was Diana Ross' band leader, and also in the Spinners' heydays, he was their band master on stage, and that's where we hooked up and became really, really close friends. And the Red Saunders and late Len Boughton, we had massive meetings and things and dinners together, and Maurice was tutoring us to take over, and he was going to take us back to Motown and get us recorded, but he became ill and he passed away.
But Solid Gold did release a record, though, and it got put out on two labels, actually. So you released a record, and it was called Didn't You Know, and It's the Magic.
Exactly.
And it originally got released on a label, which is weird because it was out of Kankakee, Illinois, called Fortress Records.
Right.
So who produced the record, and how did you get hooked up with this Kankakee record label?
George Maracas is the one that produced it. But George and myself, we got connected up through Lynn Bowden because he was working down there at one of the hospitals in Kankakee. And he knew the people at Fortress Records, and they wanted to listen to us, and they just flaked out when they heard us. And so we went in there and recorded this record, and supposedly it was gonna smash. Some things happened, and again, record business, we don't know.
So I didn't ask, so the members of the group, it was... Your wife is singing lead,
mm-hmm.
and your wife is Lucy Caffey.
Correct.
And you're singing on it, and who else sings on the record?
My two late friends, Clarence Washington, we call him Nicky Boy.
And he had a bunch of solo records, too, I think.
No, he always sang gospel.
Well, there was some other artist in Chicago named Clarence Washington then.
Might have been.
Okay.
I'm not aware.
Okay.
And the other person in the group name was DeWine Goodrich. And
how do you spell that?
D apostrophe J U A N.
Okay.
Goodrich.
Okay.
And they were tremendous singers, and he was a manager at Chicago Tribune, and my wife was an editor at Chicago Tribune, and we were in and out on the stage all of the weekend, and we were working all of the week, so we never had a moment when we weren't busy.
Okay.
And so all of those guys came in. Clarence Washington brought DeWine into the group, and we just had a real, real good time, and Red Saunders just loved us as a group. No one could beat us.
Okay. Well, let me play the record. This is a really nice ballad called Didn't You Know.
Okay.
And then we could talk some more.
Thank you.
So this is Solid Gold with Didn't You Know.
I'm not denying that you made me feel so good.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just a group called Solid Gold with a nice ballad called Didn't You Know. If you're just tuning in, I have a member of that group and of the Satagons, Benji O'Caffey, who is talking about the story of his groups. I think that record came out around 78, and it came out on a tiny Kankakee record label called Fortress Records. So did that record get any play?
A wee bit, but not really anything to stir up earnestness.
And I was just telling you that I actually have it on a different record label, and you were telling me you didn't even know it got picked up by this label, but I actually have it on 45 on AVI Records.
That's interesting. No, I didn't know that. Yeah.
So it actually did get picked up by a bigger record label somehow, but I don't think it did anything on that label either.
Oh, okay. Well, I know they didn't get the play that they wanted to get. The ones that we had behind it, they kind of more or less got out of the business and was let go from different radio stations.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So did Solid Gold stay together?
We stayed together for a while. We actually hooked up with a gentleman out north, Mario Akari, and he wrote a song for us called Two Wrongs Don't Make a Right. And it was a big record. Not a big record. It was a record that could have gone really big. The gentleman that took over, his name was Bill Ashton. I think his name was Bill Ashton. At any rate, we got the record recorded. RCA was jumping for joy, was ready to go with it. Murray at Universal Studio, where we recorded it, went out and bought all the bubbles he could buy because they were just so sure it was going to be a number one record. And Bill Leslie was his name. Bill Leslie lost the process of the record, and they never got it released. And
he lost the what? The what?
He lost the situation they was trying to take care of with RCA.
Okay.
It was supposed to be a done deal, and instead of him staying on that program, he got with the program of a group called Rare Spute and Stash.
Okay.
And he never did. We never did come back up into the picture anymore.
Okay.
We don't know what happened.
So you're saying Solid Gold was supposed to be on RCA afterwards, but your management or whatever fell through?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so did the group break up after that?
Yeah, we kind of more or less, we worked a lot with Red Thunders just for that purpose. But yeah, in a sense, we kind of broke up then.
Okay, and but you stayed involved with music in the 80s and 90s, is that right?
I did.
You talked already, so you had a cable show in the 80s, you were talking about it earlier?
Yeah, I had teamed up with a gentleman by the name of Philip East, and that was at local Channel 19 channel that went out almost everywhere.
That's Can TV in Chicago?
Exactly.
And, yeah, I've actually seen a little clip of your show, Kenny Rideout, you were talking about before.
Oh, okay.
Gave me a DVD with his performance. I'm going to try to get it up on my YouTube page from your show.
Oh, that
is. It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool, actually.
Yeah,
cool.
Kenny is good. Kenny is very good. In fact, Kenny's got a song that I'm just in love with. It's called My Bed.
Okay.
And it's, have you heard that?
I'm not sure, actually. I think he gave me an early version. I haven't heard his new.
It's just a hit. He got a gentleman working with him that had a lot of hits when he was over at Motown, and then he came over here and got with Carl Davis. And I'm sitting here, and he's going to kill me because Mario is his son, and I'm forgetting his name. But he has updated Kenny's song, and My Bad is an instant smash.
Okay.
Yeah, and that guy is good. I don't even know if he knows how good he is.
Okay.
And
But how long did your cable show run?
We were on for 7 years.
And so it featured local artists on your show?
Yeah, in and out of the Chicago arena as well as suburban areas, too.
Did you have anybody that became really famous on your show?
The ones that was supposed to come through my show, they are known today. It's pretty good. Come on, what is the name? I think they're from the West Side too. It won't come to me what their name is, but they made it. But it didn't. They were supposed to be on my show. They didn't show up for the show.
Do you have anyone that showed up on your show that became real famous?
Well, the guitarist that used to come on my show a lot, he used to be the guitarist on the road for Anita Baker.
Okay.
And that was Keith.
Okay.
And then Paul Richmond of the group that was known as...
Amusement Park. Okay.
They became very good and out there. And you know, Paul now has his own studio where he produced all the hits on Tyrone Davis, and he wrote the big hit for the group
Manhattan
Shining Star.
Yeah.
And this other group that I was trying to talk about, he produced them also. I just forgotten their name. It's been a long time.
Okay.
So
what else did you do in the 80s and 90s besides your cable show?
I still write songs, and I was performing a lot with just ourselves, the Solid Gold unit. And
so the Solid Gold, the new version of Solid Gold, was it just you and your wife?
And DeJuan Goodrich and Clarence Washington had passed.
Okay, so it was just three members?
Mm-hmm.
So do you want me to play one of the last recordings that you guys did?
Yes, if you'd be so kind.
What's the name of this song?
This song is called, in fact, my brother-in-law wrote the song. I did the monologue. It's called Heavenly Father.
Okay, and when was this recorded?
We did this 4 years ago.
Okay, so this is an unreleased track by Solid Gold.
Yes.
And this is called Heavenly Father.
Right.
My Savior, may I borrow just a moment to say we thank you. We thank you for bringing us to the river so that we may drink. We thank you for giving us this wonderful song. Oh, sweet Prince of Peace, it is so rejoicing knowing that you know me. And though I don't know how to pray like many others do, never do I let a day go by without calling just to let you know I care. When I call you, you always answer. And I just want to thank you for hearing me. And thank you for being our friend.
Crying on my pillow, precious and so few. You wouldn't believe it if I told you it's true. But I believe in the name in everything I do.
My confidence in Jesus always
pulled me through.
And you know.
Why?
confidence in Jesus. Always.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just one of the last recordings unreleased by Solid Gold from about 4 years ago. And what was that track called?
Heavenly Father.
Okay, and so what are you doing today?
Today I'm working with my brother, Ron Harris, and I'm working with Sir Knowles of the Funkadelics Parliament. And we are creating a record company, and very shortly you should hear from us. That's what we're trying to bring back. We're not trying. We're going to bring back the Motown of yesteryear, but the songs would be real music, and that's what we're doing right now. And presently, we're also in the mix of a new international radio station that I'm not at this point able to talk about.
Okay, well, that sounds exciting.
Yes, it's a lot of work, but it's very exciting. And other than that, we're just doing a lot of writing and a lot of producing of different artists.
Okay, well, I mean, I really appreciate you coming up and telling your story. You're involved with a lot of different stuff in Chicago throughout your career.
Well, I appreciate you having me here.
And do you have any last words for the listening audience?
Other than I sure hope that you have been pleasantly surprised today and you enjoyed the music. And you will hear more from us very shortly.
Yeah, keep your ears tuned.
Keep them tuned, because it's going to be good.
Okay, well, maybe we'll have time for two records. But this last record is another track from the unreleased three-song demo that actually has Kermit singing lead. And this is, and actually, this isn't even one of the songs that got re-recorded and re-released later, so this is should be totally new to anybody listening. This is a track called Dog Eat Dog, and this has Kermit singing lead, and it's also very unique and psychedelic sounding, so you should check it out. We'll be right back.
Like a chimney.